copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Each of us has different experiences. I became a Christian when I was 10 years old, and there were 30,000 people from mainly Germany, but also some European countries present in the Berlin Olympic Stadium. I will never forget, as a tiny girl, going into such a massive hall. I mean, it took you already like an hour to get to your seat, you know, and then hearing all these speakers. That was a huge impact on my Christian journey, you know, experiencing heroes and think, okay, man, they talk so much about experiencing God, and it just did something to me. When I was 16, I went to Love Europe, which was done by OM at that time, and that helped me further to take steps in towards short-term missions, and so I think, okay, that was another stepping stone. And then later I did another big conference, attended a big conference, a European one, TMA conference in the Netherlands, with about 12,000 young people from across Europe engaging and mobilizing for missions. So I know that in my personal journey, events have been really, really huge things. So when I was asked if I would join European events, you know, mobilizing young people for missions, I thought maybe, that was my thing, I could just end up, you know, I thought I could serve the speakers, like Brother Andrew George Burr, and I wanted to, you know, get them their lunch, and that makes me feel very important. In the end, I actually ended up leading the whole thing, which was not what I had anticipated. So the shoes were always too big, but it has been so exciting. And just, I came across a study last year from Northern Ireland, one of the first ones we have, from an event called Summer Madness, if you've ever heard of the Northern Irish Youth Event. And they did the first study, which you can find online. I'm also happy to send you the PDF. But it was then that they analyzed how people come to faith, I mean, especially young people, and who are the most influential factors in their life. And it's not the parents, it's not the church, it's the youth leader and events. So, you know, how young people come to faith, and also then, you know, get involved in ministries, and I mean, or get involved in the church, and it's the youth leader and his events. So I think sometimes, you know, I wish it could be sometimes different, but it is that, you know, that powerful impact. And so it would be interesting to see also how it is with you in your countries and so on. But so anyway, so I was very intrigued by events, and I started in, and I tried to ask around, is there any evaluation? How do you evaluate events? You know, have they got any sort of long-lasting impact? And I went to Willow Creek. I went to Urbana, if there are any Americans here, you know, have these big youth mission festivals. And I tried to talk to my conference friends across the world and say, what are you doing to evaluate? And the only thing which I could find out was that after then the event, you ask for how did you like the speakers, the program, and accommodation. You know, was the food okay? And so you just asked sort of the basic information, but we would never know if there was any impact long-lasting. I mean, like with my conferences, I want to see lives being transformed. I want to shake Europe in some regards with, you know, my few thousands which I have there. I want to have an impact that they're going to be true to their faith. They're going to, you know, make an impact in their society. It's very hard to measure. So actually, I started on that journey. I did my master's dissertation last year on Europe, and actually evaluated the MissionNet conference. I did four in the past, and actually I started on that journey and said, okay, what can we do? What is out there? And I found out in the secular setting, as well as in the Christian setting, there's nothing on event impact. So you're here breaking the grounds with me. You're my research buddies now. But so I'm very glad that you're here. Somehow I hope that you get something out of this, looking at events. I'm not talking about event management today. That could take a whole, you know, 3-4 days just to talk on how to do good events. But I want to, you know, talk with you through impact and what could be out there. What are some of the measurements we can take? And I start with that one of my friends from 3DM UK said, if you have nothing in place within the first 72 hours after an event you did, don't do the event. Yeah, that's a very strong statement, but it comes from a very famous youth pastor in the UK. He said, you bring people to faith, they become Christians at these events, and then you imagine your summer camp, and then you have like a 3-week break until they start school and youth group starts again, you know. So actually, by the time they go back to their churches, they have had a negative experience back home, or something happened. They were saying, there was just a feeling, you know. God, was really speaking to me? I'm not sure that this was the decision I really took. My friends made me do that. And, you know, so if you have nothing in place within the first 72 hours after an event, don't do it. So that was his statement, and that really shook me to the core. I thought, man, what am I doing? Am I actually now, in the end, maybe turning people against God? Because they had an experience, it turned out to be like negative, they didn't know what to do with it, and actually they're much harder in the end to reach than actually doing something straight after, and you integrate them to something. So that was my journey I was on, and I'm just taking you on my journey, and because I was so hooked on this topic now, I actually just started a PhD. I'm not sure I'm going to get very far, but I try to look at, are there any events, any tools out there to look at event and impact, and actually see if there's some common grounds here and so on. So even just talking about it, already I met two guys here who can link me to another professor who might have done something in that direction. Right, so you understand a bit, hopefully, my dilemma here. So I'm coming from practice and trying to get some theory to it, and also see, is there any common ground for all of us here to say, okay, what can we do to really have an impact? So, looking at events, definitions, limitations, you had that very good question, what is an event? And I'm going to just give you the theory here. I actually found out through my studies that there, even if you talk about events, it could be anything from a 2-hour meeting to 3 days or 4 days of conference meetings, you know. And then even I realized that within the English-speaking world, the UK, the Brits, the Americans, the New Zealanders, the Australians all use different terms for the same thing. And then, you know, then, okay, so I use the word Congress, like for the things I did across Europe, and now I have the validation. I can call it a Congress because it is about more than 2 days and it involves more than 5 nations. You know, this is like how definitions go in that kind of event management thing. So there is this... The UN has a terminology here that is called the meeting industry, you know, which talks about events as such and trying to come up with some terminology, but I realized actually what a mess. So I just put it all into my appendix. But so it's a governing body, at least trying to now come up and say, oh, you know, are there any sort of leading factors in event management? So when we look at characteristics of an event, I'm not talking about time and, you know, what, you know, accommodation or food or something, but, you know, what are the elements in an event? You know, it's always experience-oriented. And it depends, of course, how much you let it be experiential in that case. How much do you work with all the senses? Often we have, you know, conferences where there's lots of frontal teaching. There is hardly any engagement. I've been to various Willow Creek conferences in Germany, which we do for youth leaders. We draw about 4,000 youth leaders, and there is not one single session which is not from the front. So that's very hard. You have a full day of conferences. You have half an hour breaks in between. You already need half an hour to queue for the toilet, so you're already stressed. Coming back to your place and time, and it's just frontal teaching. But yeah, it depends how it is done, you know. But it's hard. But it should be, you know, interactive. There's like a production. You set up something up on stage with lights and sound, whatever you need in that case. And also, of course, you try to introduce the organization. You must have a cause which makes you run an event. I mean, who of you, you know, is like leading an event? Like, are you the main organizer of your events?
At small
events. Yeah? Okay. So how is your stress level before the event? 1 to 10, 10 really being bad?
Sometimes, but people register last week.
Absolutely. So registration is a big stress for, I think, most of us. Any other, you are not stressed, you.
No, because we planning, we love planning, and after that it looks easy for people.
And yeah, it looks easy for people, but what about you?
Oh, it's for me the same. It's everything is planned a half year before, and it's only going on.
You have no crisis.
No.
Before and after events and.
I can change something, I will be stressed, but
okay.
You can't change, you are going on. We pay for the place, we do what we can, and
okay.
Now we're only waiting for God's grace.
Okay, only. Which country are you from?
Poland.
It seems to be you're so relaxed that I want to swap with you.
Yeah.
I had twice speakers died before the event, you know. Sure, you are very stressed finding a substitute, you know. And every time I say, if I have someone who is above 70, don't go and do any sports before, like 6 months before the event, you know. I don't know, last time I did my mission at conference for a year and 6 weeks before the bombs went off in Paris. You do something, you know, like that, you are in trouble. That's a serious crisis. The other time I was doing another conference, a missionary conference for Europe, and 6 weeks before, there was a gay leading the council of the hall I was renting. And he knew by that time only that it was a Christian event. He tried to take the hall away from me. I mean, I was expecting 3,000 people, and I had no plan B, you know. So I think you're very lucky. Oh, very blessed. And
my event is really small.
but even small events, you can have, I mean, the individual can cause, you know, various elements. So, you know, I think in the end, you give your best, you plan as much as you can, and exactly what you're saying, we need to rely on the grace of God. And then I think, I always say, even here at ELF, I go into this kind of conference mode. You just go through, survive. You don't, like in the mornings, I don't ask myself, oh, how do I feel today? You know, do I still feel I'm okay? How do I look? You know, there's just no question anymore. You know, you just go. One of the things which I then realized in talking around with the youth ministry leaders, we started a network across Europe, is that you do various events, but we realize that we do very little on discipleship. And actually, we realize you need some discipleship elements within events to cause a long-lasting impact. I'm going to give you my favorite example of an elephant and a mouse event. That some of our events, I mean, like mine, I would say it was an elephant. You know, it was huge. I mean, like you, it took me more than, I don't know, 1.5 years to plan until you get all the speakers booked and so on. So that was like the big thing. People could see you have advertisement about it. You create your videos and you try to get, you know, all the nations on board and so on. So that was like huge for us, at least. And then you have the mouse event, you know, which is like rather small, and you think, okay, this is my small group, I'm going to do a dinner with them, you know, it's still an event, but, you know, it's less stress, you can, you know, cut it up in sizable pieces, you only need one person to man it, you know. So, right, so what is that elephant event? And I think most of you can sort of in your mind now, you know, think, okay, what is my event, you know, where am I in mine? So we have the elephant, which is, you know, large gatherings. It's complex. I mean, you deal with program, finances, logistics, communications, you know, fundraising maybe coming extra on that. You have a calling for this thing, so you're going to hit it home as much as you can. And you need good performance. I mean, you need people not to mess up on stage. I mean, even like here, you know, you try to have it theologically sound, that you have prepared the message well, but it costs you loads of energy and people to manage the whole thing. And then, you know, want it to be attractive. This is something which is drawing people in. So we hope that youngsters are saved, they're inspired, and so on. And then we have the mouse event. In that case, we use the rabbit and say, okay, it's small group oriented, right? It's about relationships. Each of us is seen within the context of it. It's simple. You can easily multiply it in your area. And you go deep. And rabbits are small, but we know that they get many babies quickly, right? And I wondered about my events now, how much can I actually integrate the kind of rabbit effect into mine? Because if I just do the elephant sort of thing, it's big, it's attractive, but will I really go deep with the young ones? What if I want to talk about transforming lives? I want to call them into missions. I want to call them to be radical for Jesus. I mean, it doesn't just work. Anyway, we have the elephant. I'm not going to give you some biological lessons here. It's fertile 4 times a year. It takes 22 months to get the baby elephant created and born, right? And it takes 18 years for them to be sexually mature. So this is a long preparation for a big animal, and it takes time. In 3 years, the family grows from 2 to 3, right? So that takes a lot of effort, and you know, it takes time and preparation and so on. And then we have, yeah? You want to go back to, yeah?
Thank you.
you like the heart, yeah? And then we have the rabbit. Yeah, it's born, it's fertile, right? I mean, simple, it's easy to be multiplied. I mean, they have like 7 babies at once. Yeah, it's not just one little, small, sweet animal. It's 7 pieces. And in 3 years, 2 rabbits become how many?
1,000.
I take that guess. What have you got, Ed? 10?
10,000.
10,000?
In 3 years.
Oh, who is a mathematician? Who is the student of John Lennox? Is anyone giving me a bit more than 10,000?
Definitely more.
No, sorry?
Definitely
even
more.
Definitely more. Okay. You want to see it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's you.
Right, but you know, it's the multiplication is so fast. So I'm wondering now, you know, if we have these rabbit sort of things. I mean, if we want to see Europe being transformed, we cannot just wait for the elephant, right? Because it will take years to see progress, you know, in that. But if we just take the rabbit, I mean, we all know that events are important, that they're you know, attractive, they're drawing people together, you can create a certain DNA through that, and the kind of spirit, and you can spread it around. I mean, like ELF is doing that, you know, it's spreading around theology, mentorship, leadership training, whatever is in there. So you need some kind of attraction. And actually then I came back home and I analyzed my events and said, okay, what can we do to have rabbit elements in a conference? Like if you have, let's say, more than 100 people. So any ideas? What would you do? What do you do? What is your rabbit element maybe in your elephant?
Small groups. Application.
That's right. Yeah. Small groups, very good. Application and discussion in the groups or?
In the small groups.
Yeah.
My events, they always are. If there's nothing in a small group, they're always complaining that we need something.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. Of course, it's a bit tricky sometimes, you know, for people to sort of open up, but if you have a sort of constant small group maybe over your event period, then that's very safe.
And also questions and answers after session.
Yeah, very good. We even now try to, in our main sessions, to have a kind of response form so that you have actually, while you had a preacher, you know, I mean, some are amazing with social media. You can immediately tweet them and ask them questions so that the speaker already can answer like even at the end of his session, he's immediately targeting the questions of the people who raise that, who raise the issues, or even just turn to your neighbor and just 1 minute, take 1 minute to say, okay, what have you learned? What has spoken to you? Because you need this kind of rabbit element in there not to forget, because then we know, like here, you go to the next meeting, you thought you were really touched by this evening and element, now you just go to the next session, and then you think, what did I hear? What did I get out of it? So any other ideas you have for rabbit elements?
Flexibility.
Yeah, can you explain that?
Well, it has to be cancelled. It's easier to arrange plan B.
That's right. Especially if you have the rabbit thing, in there. That's right. It's harder if you combine, that you have the rabbit elements, for example, in that elephant, that it's harder to be that flexible. You can be flexible in the small group somehow, Yeah. But I always think that the core values of your event should somehow be something around this rabbit thing. I mean, to hit it home with people, no matter what age, they need to have time for personal reflection, for personal discussions. And even I love that ELF, it's now starting more with these learning communities, the year-round mentoring. This is all the rabbit element within the ELF, movement here of ELF, the bigger one, and then you have something during the year. So I try to look at impact and say, what does it mean? And there's the Oxford Dictionary, saying countable or uncountable effect on something or someone to achieve a result, right? So we are result-driven. We are not just doing an event or a concert or whatever because we just like to provide a nice atmosphere, right? I think that's we all know this would be a waste of money because we want to achieve something through that. And then actually I came up and said, for me impact is a powerful effect that something or especially something new has on a situation or a person, which will lead to action. I want the ones who are at my events to love God more, to read the Bible more, to go out and care for the homeless, to lead Bible studies with others. I want action. And I think most of you would probably agree with me, this is what you want to see at your event too. Right? You want action, you want something coming out of it, even if it's a concert you do or something. You want, young ones to meet other Christians, you want to bring them together, you demonstrate the body of Christ or whatever is in there. So then I looked at the way we learn. And one of my friends has also done her master's dissertation on event impact, and she looked at event and networking. How do they correlate? That actually you need an event to create space for networking. And if you have no event, it's very hard to network. So you need to start off somewhere. So I always hope, even from ELF, that we make connections here, which we somewhat take home. I mean, this is all about connection here anyway at ELF. But the way we learn is, I'm just trying to see where my text here is. So the one, if I start from left to right and I go from the top to the bottom here, what do you think, does this exemplify here? What do you think it could mean, the way we learn? What do you think? It's hard not to say, okay, oh, this is now action, or this is... What do you think it means, the way we learn? If you look at the brain being in usage here.
By emotions and by expression.
Yeah, a little bit in that direction, yeah. We know that... Sorry, you wanted to...
Hearing or doing.
Yeah, exactly. So you have, actually now this one here is very much focused on words, because words is that what you speak, what you hear, so it is going in the same sense as well. So it would be learning, a hearing of words would be left, looking at words would be right, speaking of words would be left down, the bottom, and then thinking of words would be at the right side down there, which means that you are consciously part of the show. When you think, you have a chance to articulate, and so it becomes your own. right? And I think that is interesting because each of these things here have used a different part of our brain. But the maximum success we see is when it's below, when actually we have been seeing, we have been hearing, and then actually has been touching us just as well with the emotions. And I think our events, if you look at yours, they should reach all the different kinds of senses. Our brain should be involved in different capacities. And I think sometimes we find it the hardest to actually then actually have an experience for them, because it's easier, it's much easier for us to do frontal teaching where we're not questioned and whatever. But the experience, if you can experience something within the elephant, it is so much better and so much more lasting. Right, so there are different kinds of events I looked at. Different kinds are not of events of impact. And the only ones where there's really research done is the financial impact, right? And you, I know you're making pictures, but I'm also very happy to send you the slides afterwards. So that's the easiest part for me, if you like to have the whole presentation. But so this is the only thing where countries, mainly regions or so, agree this is how we term financial impact. This is what we want to see through our events. So, I mean, of course, we want to all have break even at our, you know, at our events. We hopefully even make some money, which we can use for another activity or so. But, you know, we're already praising God when we just have, you know, break even. And we just got out of it and we made some income or whatsoever. But these are what they have in business, you know, determine as the financial impact. So you actually now look at the region, like when you do your conference, well, I don't know, within the church or so, that you think, okay, because you do an event, you use a caterer, I don't know, there may be toilet facilities you need to rent, maybe you use the local school for accommodation or so, then you already integrate the region, and through that you help to create jobs or keep the jobs in place, right? Because people are there, they need to clean, people are the ones who provide the food. So this is all counted under financial impact. And you, there might be some employment there, whatever. So it's very economically here. But this is what we found out. This is like where countries sort of agree on and say, okay, this is what we want to see. And then there is the other kind of impact, which is called the business value of meetings. And this is what they, where they have some stuff, and I'm just, this is the last part here of theory here, the business value of meetings. They say, okay, what does it mean if it's not just about finances? But as I told you, there's hardly anything done on it. But they were looking, okay, what is it if I have objectives, at least then I can measure, have I received, you know, have I gained my objectives or not? But I'm interested in the non-economic impact. Yeah, this I want to see what's coming out of it. I mean, of course, I care if there are, you know, jobs being created or whatever, because we have been running events or been helping the economy in the region or whatsoever. But I'm more interested, of course, in what happens through non-economic impact. You know, what is feasible? What can we actually achieve? What can we see? And so that was. It's done a study since 2010. Some Australians now got together and said, okay, let's experiment. Let's go to conference and let's analyze what is actually happening. So sometimes you think maybe ELF is a pain with their evaluations because you're not allowed to leave a workshop, even today, without having given an evaluation. But actually this is the best way of getting feedback, because it's straight after and you actually tell them what you thought of that or not, because you will have forgotten by the time you go into the break and meet another person. Sure, they found out that there was some correlation between an event and saying, okay, you have knowledge experience, right? There is some kind of knowledge transfer from the stage to me. That there is some kind of networking happening, maybe educational outcomes. This is what we do a lot in our networks here. And workshops, there is some fundraising, and you can also use it, of course, to brand your church or brand your course, whatever is out there. So I thought this is all what other people sort of work on, and it's not much yet, but I thought, what is it about us that we want to see? What is that you want to see through your event? Can you just give me two or three voices here? What do you want to see? Why do you do your events?
bring confidence to Christians in terms of their faith and witness.
Yeah, okay, confidence to their faith and witness. What else?
Encourage people to act. To encourage people to think differently and to do something after.
Yeah, very good.
Evangelism.
Yeah, evangelism, yeah.
Influence opinion.
Influence, yeah, opinion, good. Have you ever done an analysis of the people who come to your event? I mean, like, you have your goals in mind, and then you analyze the people why they came. That would be very interesting. You know, I told you that I've run these MissionNet conferences, so the word mission is in there, right? So it's very clear it's about missions. But when I asked the people why they came, 24% of them said we are interested because of missions. You know, we came because of missions. This is horrific to all the mission exhibitors who are there. I think, whoa, let's start recruiting. You know, 3,000 young ones, so sure, I'm going to get 50 of these, you know. But only 24% of them were interested in missions. Why they came was because they wanted to make new friends. And then they wanted to get encouragement for their faith. And then nothing. it's sobering and a bit humbling to analyze who comes to your events and then actually what do they get out of it, or what is the motivation. And I think, my goodness, when we talk about journeying with people, and that could also just relate to pastors or whoever you do the event for, it can be a very different motivation. So that already is the hard part, knowing what they want and what you actually want. So I looked at, you know, what are the changes, you know, I want to see, or, you know, we want to see as, and you just mentioned some stuff. And you probably know that from psychology, the hierarchy of needs, right? So if you learn the best, of course, if your basic needs are filled. And I realized, like, for the Paris attack in November 2015, leading on to 16, you know, that people had the parents were so scared of sending their children, you know, they were 16, 17, 18, but they were scared of sending them because they thought something's going to happen here. So I needed to make sure that I did a press release on safety. You know, I said, okay, I've got a police officer who's running the event, security, I have these measurements and so on. You know, so you need to do something, you need to take actual steps to provide the safety. Though we had everything in place, so I just needed to make sure I'm going to write it down and I publicize about it, because then I make sure they know. Another time we did that, I don't know about your nation, but we have loads of neo-Nazis in the eastern part of Germany. And one of my events was there. And so I said, security measurement is, you're only allowed to leave the campus, no matter how old you are, with three others. And so you form a group that you're out there, and especially when we had, you know, black people with us, you know, at the conference, saying, make sure you're going to go in a group, because that could be dangerous. So nothing happened when they came, and they tried to cause some trouble and wanted to call for an anti-demonstration. But it was after Christmas, and I think everyone was on break. But we prayed hard, I tell you, to fill these, you know, different needs and say, okay, then how do we then provide a place for them to meet? You know, if they come for a friendship and this is a need for them and I want to foster that, what is out there, what I can provide as a safety net? So small groups and so on, of course, I was trying to say, okay, you know, you can bond together. One of the politician in the UK, I don't know if anyone's here from the UK, he's an atheist, and he said the Christians might be the only glue keeping Europe together. The Christians might be the only glue keeping Europe together. And I thought, like, wow, what a statement from someone who doesn't believe in God. I thought, you know, I at my conferences, I want to see exactly that we oppose the environment. We oppose what other people think we have to do or not, you know. So trying to provide that safety and saying, yes, we do that together and we are the body of Christ in Europe. And then only later then, you know, you can come to, you know, fulfill their needs of the theological capacities, mental stuff and so on. So I realized that at one point, you know, when we talk about experience and we talk about hunger in the world and about justice, you know, I cut down on food. at our conference. Every time we have a solidarity meal. So when we talk about justice and we have a big thing, I don't know, with MICA Challenge or other activities or International Justice Mission, they just get bread and water and they're completely surprised. They're shocked. They hate me. Because I just entered the dining room and there's nothing there. So we treat them very unfair. You know, I've paid for it. No, I calculated in my budget that later I would give them a special treat, you know. Whereas that kind of experience, you know, if you talk about hunger, I mean, they just lasted for 2 hours, you know. And I also was very naughty. I closed down all the snack shops for the 2 hours. So there was no chance to get any chocolate instead because I didn't want, you know, now to get money out of them. But I wanted them to actually experience that. And because it's amazing then what people come up with, young ones, and say, you know, I've got a right to my 3 meals a day, and it has to be meat, and so on. You know, I don't know what you get at your events, but I have some fantastic stories. And sometimes I needed to digest and forgive. Right, so this is where we are at with the generations. I think, you know, what are the needs in your context? How will you fill them? Also, what are the experiences you can give? Don't talk about it, but let them taste as much as you can. So I was trying to look at the various impacts which are out there, and I'm happy for you in a minute also to then contribute, you know, say, well, this is what is that you want to see? You know, maybe you have written down something, but this is what we came up with. Now, of course, yes, it's about knowledge. Yes, we want education outcomes in there. But, I mean, for us, it's important that they get to know the Word of God. So I cannot just talk from the stage and say, you know, we love you to engage more with the Bible. We need to practice that. So we've actually just started to put the Word of God first in the morning. We shifted program at the last conference, said, okay, we start with the Word of God first in our small group. And we did the inductive Bible study, which means you just read the text on its own. And you just look at the words. And I don't know if you've ever done that, but it's a fantastic way of reading the Bible with young ones who don't even know the Bible as such. So we just gave them all the manuscript and we read it. And then they came to the auditorium with their questions in their mind because they had studied the text on its own. And that was so powerful. Both we thought, you know, we talk about Bible engagement and we think, oh, the young generation doesn't read the Bible anymore. Yes, that's true. But then I can't talk about it. I need them to taste it, right? You get what I'm always saying, you know, hinting at here. It's important not just to talk about it, but let them experience that. I want them to understand maybe some part of history. Or, you know, I said for me it's important that they understand the needs of Europe. They should become friends across Europe, that they help each other. What about Montenegro with 75 indigenous believers in a nation of 700,000 inhabitants? Yeah, and they come to our event. They've never been at any event with more than 100 believers, and the rest of the ones were American missionaries, right? So they come. They are in the crowd of 2,000 or 3,000 young ones. They've never had, you know, so many Christians around them in their lifetime. It feels very unfair to them. You know, we have these big youth meetings in Germany with 16, 20,000 young ones, and for them, they've never even, you know, seen that in their life. So how do you deal with that understanding of Europe? And actually, then we realized actually we could actually now try and trace that back when we ask them, you know, what are our outcomes here? We want to see some of these things. We can then later trace, have people actually grown in their understanding of the Word of God? Have they actually got more passion for Europe? And if you're very detailed, you could actually then look at and analyze the sermons. How many times were the word Europe mentioned from the platform? Then to be, you know, really, really accurate. But this is taking it too far. And I think that's no one has time to do that. But you could. But then, of course, that's the hardest one here, the spiritual impact. How do you, you know, value the impact? How do you measure what has happened spiritually? Because you can't. I mean, something happens in the heart and in the mind. You have God speaking, but how can you, you know, say this is what happened? How will we express spirituality? It comes through our actions, right? I mean, it has to. Something, you know, love of God is happening in my heart, and that leads me to justice. That leads me to read the Word of God more. So it needs to lead to action. That's again the impact definition. It needs to lead to action. So when I say we want, you know, your prayer life to be changed, we want you to, I don't know, in my case, pray more for the nations of the world. Then we provide resources for them to pray for different, maybe, nations or unreached people groups and so on. But we then need to see, have they done taken any actions on that? Right, so that is just some of the things we try to look at. You know, what is the spiritual impact here? And some of the charismatic and Pentecostals among us have it a bit easier to understand than maybe some of us, me as a German Lutheran or so, what is happening out there. And so then we looked at this and said, okay, actually, this is what we want to see at the end. If something has happened cognitively, and it had, you know, leads to a spiritual impact, then it needs to lead to a behavioral impact. And we said, what is it that people do more after an event? What is it? And we tried to analyze and see, you know, and interviewed people. And I did surveys among 150 youth leaders who came. I surveyed among attendees who came twice. You know, I asked them, you know, why did you come at first? You know, for the first time, why did you come? And then also, if they come back, I say, why have you come back? You need these indicators, otherwise you do not understand that you think you have a fantastic marketing strategy, and you think, whoa, I got so many hits on Instagram and so on. But when you ask them, why are you here? You know, or who brought you? You know, how come you're here? They say, a friend asked me to come. That's the number one thing. A friend asked me to come. You can have the most amazing marketing strategy, but in the end, it's the friend who is deciding if you're there or not, you know? So you have to really learn, you know, with people are on the phone and called us, we said, you know, how have you heard about us? You know, what has been the you know, the information here? You need to know. So I was looking at, you know, could they read the Bible more? Are they giving more to the poor and that kind of stuff? Anything you want to add from your side? Anything you see in these three categories, cognitive, spiritual, behavioral, what you would add from your side? Yeah?
In education, we put up knowledge, skills, and attitudes as three kind of categories of aims, of educational aims.
Within the cognitive, yeah? Or?
Yeah, well, I think that would be all kind of cognitive.
Okay, okay.
The category general of knowledge, and then skills, which is slightly different.
Yeah.
Application.
And
then also general knowledge, general or attitude.
Okay, very good. Okay, yeah, that's great. Anyone else? Have you done anything on that? Anyone of you having ever written down what you want to see as an outcome from your event? You're not daring to tell me, or? In my year-end mentoring group last time, I had 6 fantastic mentees. And some of them reach 10,000 of youth each year. And they had nothing written at all. I said, you cannot leave me without nothing in writing. It's going to kill me, and it's going to kill you in the long term. Because who can join your team if they don't know what the vision is? Who can pray with you very strategically if they don't know what you're actually aiming at? So that's probably my biggest plea from today. You know, what is your outcome? What do you want to see? So how can this be measured? How can impact be measured? That's the thing here. You know that KISS thing, you know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, have your outcomes written down, but don't make them, you know, very difficult. But just, you know, write down what you want to see, you know, with your team, brainstorm about it. And these are the things we pray in. We have them up on our wall and say, you know, this is what we want to see at the event, you know, not just numbers and fundraising and the numbers growing, hopefully, you know. But no, we want to pray that in and say, okay, what are some of the measurements we need to take in our program to actually to see some of it? And then also, of course, it says, you know, use the SMART goals, that it has to be specific, relevant, measurably, timely. So you need to make sure that you have all of this in place. So actually, it takes you some effort to do that with your team. If you have never done that in writing or so, it takes you a few hours. You know, I tried with every team meeting. I said we are driven by the vision. So you need to repeat the vision constantly to your team, and then say, okay, this is what our outcomes are. Are we okay? You know, because if you haven't got a timeline, then you cannot even, you know, say we are timely or not. You know, people are running behind. I mean, I just had one of my mentees here in my course. He was so passionate about evangelism. He's a great guy. People get converted on the streets every time he's out there in Strasbourg. And he had this big dream of filling the stadium of Strasbourg. That was why he was on my course. And I said, okay, how far are you? I mean, I with missionaries, it's like nearly two years of planning, and I only have 3,000, you know, and he wanted 20,000. So how far are you? Well, his event should have been in July this year, and that was last year, August, September. Well, I'm thinking about who are the pastors in the area. I think, like, goodness me, this is like 9 months before the event. You want to have 20,000 people and no pastor in your area knows that you have that. Have you got the venue? And he just went to get the venue. And of course, what did the city council say? Are you mad? 2 months before the actual event, you want to get the stadium? With no money, you have no insurance, you have no assurance that you're going to get the money from anyone. So that was, he became a bit of a laughing stock, I have to say, to the council. And they said, you're crazy, you know. Whatever faith you've got, it's not what we work with, you know. So, man. Because I know when I work with these events, and you need to prove to the police, you need to prove to the fire department that you have escape plans and everything, you know. So anyway, so have your outcomes. So identify your target group. Who are the ones you want to reach? Who is your primary target group? Could that be, I don't know, is that leaders? EDLF, you know, is leaders? Is it, you know, pastors? Is it volunteers? Who is the primary target group? And then you come up maybe and say, okay, I have more than that. So like at MissionNet, and that was my example, yeah, I had three target groups. And I said, my primary one are the participants. I want to see young Europeans being transformed and change their society, wherever God puts them. So I would put the emphasis on them. But then you have a byproduct. You have 500 volunteers, or whatever, 300 or so who come. And then you have about 200 exhibitors, because we are very strong on exhibition and skill set and mentoring and so on. So a huge group, so you want to impact them, but they're not. If they complain about the noise in the main hall, I don't care. You know, the exhibitors is too loud for them, and they're 60 plus, you know. I think, okay, the target group is, for me, 16 to 30 years of age, young Europeans. You know, so if they like the music and they like the sound and whatever, then it's for them. It's not for the others. So I'll just give you an example of what I did with our team. We sat down and we put it into writing. So this is the outcome we want to see for every person. So, okay, teaching on the biblical basis on missions. We said every person has an opportunity to sin here, you know, across Europe. Every person will have the opportunity of worshiping and learning together. And we say unique multicultural gathering, which means that there are different styles of prayer from the front, that you need to make sure, because we deal with Europe, that you have 20 languages and more present in Europe. So we try to have every language group at least once up, and have Bible readings in the various languages, have prayer in different languages, so esteeming what is out there in Europe. So if he promised them that, we need to make sure that we have different styles of prayer. And we talk about, you know, someone in Hungary prays very differently to the one in Germany than to the migrant who lives in, I don't know, in Amsterdam, right? So you need to make sure that whatever you promise, and you're going to work that out. And we say, okay, they're going to be challenged to link up within local and national mission network. So if there are no networks in the countries, we need to help them. And so these are just, you know, what we did for the participants. Then there's something for the service team. I said, okay, they have a chance of attending one session each day, because otherwise they have to work 8 hours or something, you know. So I promised them they can join one session per day and receive teaching. They have the opportunities to be introduced to mission agencies. They have the opportunity to serve God and other people according to their skills and gifting. You talk about 300 people finding a place for their skills and gifting. That's very hard, because sometimes someone has to clean the toilets. I mean, that was never a problem. I had the youth pastors take on that team and clean the toilets. That was amazing. Sure. So just that you have it in writing, what is that you want to see as an outcome for them? And also you have the exhibitors. because these women identified three categories, and so we made it clear what we want from them. So it just gives you something to say, this is how we try to work on this. The more specific you can be, the better you can actually succeed. And then if you are very keen and you love this kind of strategy and business model, then you can actually also then have your balanced scorecard. And I actually found out that some people, organizations have now created such a balanced scorecard. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but then you have different categories and you actually can measure, you can give rankings, what is important for you, what are the values behind things, are you more a development agency or, you know, whatever is your, what is your value, so you can work on that. And so then you look at the customer and the internal business processes. So we realized that we looked at internal business process and we realized our data bank was rubbish. We couldn't, you know, you want to trace back how many people have come back a second time. Yeah, you want to know because you need to know the reasons why they come back. They could be your future sponsors. People who come back a second time are very willing to invest some of their time into your event because they believe in this. So you need to know who is there. And I attended Jerry Tombly's and Bob Beard's year of mentoring. Both times I had the privilege. So I learned so much in looking at, you know, how do I categorize my donors and looking at. And I found out that the most generous people I have are my volunteers. My volunteers give smaller amounts, but most of them give amounts. You know, we always add. And then I realized, okay, I need to change my registration thing. And I said, okay, for every person, I mean, you register. And then I always ask, would you like to sponsor another person? And they could even then, in the end, say, this country even, because they might have a burden for the Turks or somehow, you know, Albania or so. So trying to actually, you know, be as specific as you can be, because the young generation doesn't want to just give money into the pot. They want to have a real specific project. So these are some of the lessons I learned and where I also failed. And then there are some tools which we can use then and say, okay, I have the balance scorecard, or, you know, I have my outcomes written down, and now I want to measure, have I actually achieved that? And so then we did various things. You can do, you know, first, after each session, you can do a poll up on the internet, or in there even some amazing tools. But I realized that I had great ideas of polls, great ideas, or my team had. And then we realized, actually, we can't provide wireless LAN for everyone for free. You know, because they come from all across Europe, it doesn't work with other networks, so it would have cost me €10,000 just to set up wireless LAN. So, great idea of doing polls if you can't get online. So, some of the mistakes are, you know, we just had to find new measurements, so actually, in the end, we created an internal web where they could just access our pages. And then also look for evaluation feedback. And so what I started to do now is that because I learned now from that it's not enough just to ask how did you like the food and fellowship, and, you know, each speaker would be ranked, I mean, just like our networks here. I now started to do a survey before. So 3-4 days before the event, I would actually send them a survey. And I would ask about the expectations and values. I was trying to get some personal information from them to see where are they on their spiritual journey. In my case, it was interesting to find out, you know, have they been traveling across Europe? Have they already made friends before they come to the event and so on? Have they already, how much is the, you know, the Bible knowledge, the mission knowledge? Are they reading mission biographies and so on? Because this is a very useful information for me, yeah. As a consequence, then I did the same survey, but using the questions in past tense, and then analyzing, asking exactly the same questions, and looking at what has come out as a result now, because then I could already see if there was any sort of cognitive changes. Yeah, what have they learned at the event, if I have actually been specific about things? And then I found, okay, there are some cognitive changes already. They understood missions more. They said, oh, I had an encounter, I had a great mentoring session, and so on. And now then, I did one now a year later. And I'm just working on the one now for Lausanne. You know, last year we had 800 young Alis in Jakarta. We had an amazing time. We had 1 year of preparation, which I've never had in my life before, that each month we had homework to do. even if it was just listening to a sermon of Billy Graham, it was reading a theological paper on the Lausanne Covenant, if it was listening in to one of the speakers who's going to come, you know, or is it just a video we had to do, each of us had to do like a 30-second video of ourselves because we had a big data bank of all of us, 1,000 people, including the mentors, who would come, so you could see who was coming, you know, I mean, amazing hub to connect, you know, it takes lots of effort, but we were prepared. So what are some of the things you can do? So what I did at the last one, we did some devotions. It was December, so we did an Advent calendar. And then each day was like a verse already preparing the book of, I don't know, John or so we did in the morning Bible study so that they already had worked with the text. And we encouraged them, watch this video. This speaker is coming. So what can you do, you know, already to prepare your young ones? And now I'm working on the Lausanne evaluation like a year after. Where are you in your journey as a younger leader and so on? So, and actually it is very easy to do. I mean, I've learned from some of the best guys in the world. I mean, everyone sends out surveys, so copy and paste, you know, and try and adapt it to your situation. I'm very happy also to send you some of our surveys and just see how can this be adapted, you know, to your context. And then you just do it either, you know, with a Google form. It's for free. You know, via Google form, you can just put in the questions and you get the answers back into an Excel sheet. You still need to sort it out, but there are even some free softwares where you can actually then later package it, you know, nicely. So I would really encourage you to do that. So we looked at the evaluations. Okay, there's quantitative and qualitative. Quantitative, I looked for numbers, so I sent a survey to everyone, and the how much trust you have earned, you realize in how many people respond to your evaluation. And normally, you're lucky in the secular setting if you get 2 to 3% of feedback. You know, like I've been Airbnb, I booked a hotel somewhere, and you immediately get a questionnaire from them, you know, how did you like the hotel and whatever. I hardly ever respond to any of that. And so they estimate, you know, 2 to 3% fill this in, and that provides them the information. Well, with MissionNet, I had more than 25%. So this is like, you know that they trust you, there's relations, that they want to help you. And then Lausanne I did last year, and I had never anticipated. It was 3 days before the conference. People were flying for days and traveling for days to come there, and 95% of everyone filled in the survey. And I thought, this is not because of my great survey, because no one knew me, but it was because of the trust that team had earned before the conference. So a lot is determined by your communication with them. How do you interact with them? Do you ask feedback? So we try to engage on Facebook, Instagram, uploading pictures and questions. You know, what are you dealing with? Even packing your suitcase. I mean, just fun stuff, you know, funny pictures and so on, but engaging with them. So that really you build up this momentum if you don't want to just have a single one. So anyway, evaluation of schedule, seeing when you want to do stuff. And then I also evaluated the participants. And then there are different ways you can do that, you know. I just mentioned the different things that what you can actually do. You can even have some experts come in. So we had like someone within OM Europe is a fantastic guy on statistics and measuring, you know, some stuff. And said, please come and help us and analyze our data. I can collect the data, but I can often not read the data. Don't know about you guys. So sometimes you just have, you know, 2 or 3 people around you thinking, okay, what do you see is coming up often? And so on. And then just looking at the evaluation as such and say, okay, you know, were we efficient? And then you can see, you know, again, go back to your outcomes and, you know, what have I actually now achieved? You know, when they say Bible knowledge has grown and, you know, 90% say, then you think, okay, we're good, you know, we have been successful in what we tried to achieve. And some, I realized that one time we were analyzing our worship and prayer and we only gave us 50%. I mean, as a team, we analyzed, we got the feedback, and actually we said, we did very badly on this. We promised something and we didn't keep to our promise. And no matter what the circumstances, we just didn't achieve it, right? And so then next time you think, okay, how can we prove that? So some of the lessons I've learned is that I had to refine my objectives. Actually, I realized with my with the conference we did that, and when we started, we had no objective in place. We just said, "Oh, transforming our world," you know, and Europe shall be saved or whatever. And it's so not tangible, you know. You cannot measure any of this. So we came up. So this is I'm sharing with you my steep learning curve in this, and also my failures. And then also another thing I found out, which I'd never even thought of, the emotional impact through an event. I don't know, but because everyone I sort of interviewed said, I felt a relationship, my heart was full. I mean, all that stuff, you know, people were, describing their emotions. I thought, this is so powerful. We need to do more on emotional impact. What could this mean, you know? Especially when nations meet and the crazy Spanish and Italians, you know, together with the Germans and Dutch, and there's some loosening up, you know, and some engagement in different cultures. And so, yeah, just, looking at the rabbit and the elephant, so we became much more focused on discipleship, also in our youth leaders track. We said, okay, if our younger leaders are the ones who are going to shape the future of the people who are with, we need to invest into these guys. So we set up a special track just for leaders in church and said, you know, we want to provide you with some tools that when you go home, this is what you can do in your youth groups. And so then I also did, you know, the survey among the youth leaders, and they actually said, what we gained here, you know, we can put into practice now back home. And so they have started discipleship methods back home and have started mentoring. So hearing these stories, it's not only heart lifting, but also you just think, okay, you need to be so much more clear on that. And as I told you, have direct next steps after an event. What is the things you want to see as long-lasting impact? And they say, okay, how can we foster this? You know, I always had an email ready three days after. You know, you're back in your world. I mean, there already have probably been some circumstances which is taking your joy. And so many young people come from broken homes. So you go back home, you come from a mountaintop experience, and you crash. I mean, so many young people crash after an event because they come with such an excitement and have seen God at work, and they come and they're the only Christian in school. They're the only Christian in the village or whatever, you know. So we need to somehow say, okay, this is normal, but how can we encourage you in that situation? You know, who can you link up with? So we said, you know, let's find prayer partners. And so at the last event, we had 300 people saying, I'm going to adopt a person from another culture, and we hope same gender, and say, I'm going to pray for you for the next 6 months. I'm like, well, 300 did that. I mean, fantastic. Some of them actually have become friends until so far, and they have visited each other, you know, traveling across Europe. Today it's so cheap for the young ones. They just do that, you know. So what are the things you can plan? So that's from me. There in the outline you have... I think you have the things mentioned there, but I just thought I'd just give you some clips here. 10 mistakes most event planners make, and also the big important thing on recruiting. I mean, looking at your volunteers, if they are my biggest asset, which I found out, they're the most generous people who engage with you in the event. You know, what do I do? How do I appreciate them? So you know that my symbol is always it's chocolate. You know, how do I appreciate, you know, my volunteers, you know? So I have thank you cards for each of them, you know, and I have some chocolate or something like a special meal for them or a treat afterwards or somehow that they know I don't take it for granted that they've given up their holidays and they even paid to work at our event. So thank you very much.
Thank you.